everyone, and welcome to Teach Right, the podcast for first-time instructors, experienced instructors, and anyone else interested in the teaching of writing. I'm Daniel Anderson, and we're coming to you from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Today, we're going to be talking about academic integrity, and we have an article that we've looked at. It's called A Scholarly Dialogue, Writing, Scholarship, Authorship, Academic Integrity, and the Challenges of AI. So we'll bring some AI into the conversation as well. And I'm going to let the guests introduce themselves, and then they can take it away.
Hi, my name is Kyle Cunningham. I am a second-year PhD student in the ECL. Yeah, that's all that's important about me.
I am Renee Marzuk, and I am also a second-year student in the ECL department.
I am Cal Draper, and a first-year in the ECL department, PhD.
I am Holly Thompson, and I feel like someone should explain the acronym English and Comparative Literature. I'm a first year in that program.
And I'm Faith Rush, and I'm a first year PhD student in the ECL program.
Fantastic. Our topic is academic integrity, and I guess I'm definitely interested in all of the different aspects of it. There was this AI question that came up a lot, and I think that's on everyone's mind, but you know, what do our listeners need to know about academic integrity when it comes to the teaching of writing?
I think it has to do a lot with accountability. Accountability from where you get your information. Accountability about respect to other people's ideas and the ideas that you're interacting with as you're trying to create something original or derivative, but still keeping oneself accountable and keeping students accountable on civil ways of writing.
Yeah, and I think accountability and simply raising the consciousness in students that they are and can enter a dialogue, that other people are talking about these subjects, that they're part of a larger conversation. I think that's a really eye-opening thing to learn when you enter college and start writing at the college level.
Yeah. To your point, yeah, I think one thing that was brought up in the article was just the myth of the lone writer. That all writing comes from collaboration in some way, whether that's unconscious or conscious, when students are writing their thoughts on paper or typing them up, I should say. We do live in the 21st century. So, but yeah, that all writing comes from a pre-existing discourse or comes from sometimes the thoughts of others, and they adapt that without always realizing they're doing it. But I do think it's important, like you both mentioned, to recognize that and to be self-conscious about where these ideas are coming from and that they're not just produced out of your own head. But at the same time, how do we cite and give attribution to where we get that information?
Yeah, I definitely think this article talks a lot about AI and authorship. And I think it's interesting to think with all three of you. I think about academic integrity with like responsibility a lot. And it's interesting that AI accelerates these dynamics of like intertextuality and killing authors everywhere, but you're still responsible for the rhetoric produce and you attach yourself to. And I think thinking in terms of like accountability and responsibility is an important dynamic, especially for students in the first year writing class that are going to always be responsible for the assignments that they produce and the documents they turn in. It's important to enforce, because even if you do have ChatGPT write your whole assignment, you're turning it in with your name on it. And like that, like very pragmatic, like aspect of just you are responsible for this and you're going to get in trouble if people think it's bad or think it is plagiarized or artificially intelligently generated. I think that's part of how I think through it too.
I think interesting in what you're saying is the idea of consequences.
Yeah.
And that is a big part of how we deal with academic integrity in the classroom. It's not just that we want them to be accountable. We're also telling them that if they engage in some practices that are not academically sound, there'll be consequences. How do you feel about that?
I think for me, this is the framework I'm thinking through it in, but it's less like disciplinary in terms of consequences, but more just what are the material effects of the thing that you're producing. Regardless of how you're producing it, like how does that thing intervene into rhetorical situations and create change? So there is the personal academic disciplinary element to that, where if it intervenes in the rhetorical situation of you're turning an essay into your professor who hates AI, and that means you I don't know, have to go to honor court or whatever it is now, that's bad for you personally. But it also, it helps, I think, thinking through the way that like meaning is constructed, which is what I try to push on my students and to get them to think through. Just because you're using AI to write a thing or to help in the like composition of a text doesn't change what that text is going to do once it leaves and enters into situations and stuff. I don't know if any of that makes sense, but that's like how I'm thinking through it. But there is also that kind of like control that they mentioned, control too, is like one of the ways people think through this. And that element is definitely there. And I think when we're thinking in terms of academic integrity, it's like impossible to ignore that. And I don't like to think in that kind of like institutional way, but it is part of the role. I'll stop yapping. I'll pass it off to somebody.
I think I'm perhaps quite soft, but I also like to think of a first year writing class as having leeway for mistakes, whether those are legitimate, like errors in citation or maybe ethical mistakes, particularly because they're such small classes. So we have 19 students and we are really able to attend to their texts in a way that professors with larger classes might not be able to. So I think that we have more of an opportunity and more training to investigate tomfoolery in their text and then to try to respond to that. And Dan calls it diagnosing the problem, diagnose what the issue is and figure out what's challenging, what's confusing to help write them and get them to a more sort of ethical way of composing.
And I know that in our syllabus, there's that boilerplate section that talks about academic integrity. But I'm curious to know if you all talk explicitly about it to your students at the beginning of the class or the semester, whenever you're introducing the syllabus. Is that something that you do? And I do it with my class, but we just read the syllabus together in a way. Mm-hmm. And then we talk as it comes up throughout the semester. Would you do that? Would you say that you do something similar or different?
This semester, I mentioned it for sure. Now, I didn't read through verbatim every word on the syllabus, but I did point it out and just drew out a few points of just talking about the importance of academic integrity and maybe what that looks like when they interact with AI in our class or with other sources, the importance of citing sources.
I couldn't tell you what happened on syllabus day. I blacked out. I wasn't there. But I do remember I have brought up AI before and brought up AI pretty quickly because I knew that was something that they either were already exposed to or were going to be exposed to. And I found that at least my students come in with a pretty rigid sense of what's right and wrong in terms of academic attribution, and they're pretty sensitive to that. And I think that AI is a conversation that requires a little more nuance and unpacking for them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do think that these students have like a cognizance or awareness of what academic integrity looks like. But there are cases, I think, where as AI is becoming more a part of their lives, even in small ways, it is something that does have to come into the conversation. So obviously, you do need to talk about the boilerplate. Here's what UNC is requiring, but I do think it depends on the professor as well and the instructor and how you choose to implement it, or if you're not going to implement it, making that clear. But also at the end of the day, it goes back to responsibility, I think, for me. Like, the students have a responsibility if they're going to actually apply what you say or not. And some of them do and some of them don't. So you just have to, I think, take it case by case in that situation.
Yeah, I think I'm also thinking about the blur that was syllabus day. And I think part of it, because I also did not like verbatim read through, but I did, if I'm remembering correctly, which maybe I'm not, I like went through point by point and I was like, here's what I'm expecting and here's what the university says. And when I got to academic integrity, I talked about plagiarism and AI. And that's, I think, I would argue like a lot of people just, that's what that means, is don't do plagiarism and do what the AI policy is, whatever that policy is. And I've been thinking about this a lot as I'm like looking over my syllabus and like how I'm going to change it. What do we even mean by academic integrity? What do those words mean? Why are we putting them together? And why is it always negative? Like, academic integrity to me is negatively defined through what is not permitted within like the institution of the academy. But integrity is like a positive thing. And so I don't know. This is a kind of an open question, but what does academic integrity mean to y'all? Because I'm not sure. I don't have a very good definition in my head.
That's really, I was going to say that's really interesting because I've thought about that too. I don't know up to which point it's an artificial idea because I focus on the 19th century. And then at that point, the limits, the authorship was less defined. People were borrowing from each other all the time and they were not attributing. And that created a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of conversations. And they were possible because of people weren't tracking what they were saying. So in a way, it slows you down, but I do understand why it's necessary. I don't have an answer. It's just an observation based on my own area of study.
This is making me think about my second unit, which was a social sciences unit. And I had my students write case studies on literacy narratives that we got from an online database of literacy narratives. And it was really important to me to try to communicate to them that their job was to think about these narratives very critically, be really thoughtful with them, but also remember that they're the kind of raw narratives of an actual person. And they're not going to read like a professional author's work generally. And I thought it was pretty productive to have them think about the human being behind the text that they were analyzing and think about how do I actually want to handle this person's life and handle this person's feelings when I'm writing about them in an academic context. I hadn't connected that to academic integrity before, but that came up for me when you brought up a kind of problematizing of integrity.
Yeah.
There was something in the article and I was like vigorously trying to find it while I was sitting here, but there's a quote and it's on page 584 where it says, and it's one of the interviewees responding to this question about what roles and responsibilities do writing studies and writer scholars have in understanding and responding to such changes, the changes being like AI being introduced into the classroom and just like in general. And Lisa said, as writing scholars, we understand authentic assessment. We know how to teach the critiquing of text, how to engage with information, and how to develop a writing process that will promote students' critical thinking and critical engagement. And so I think to your point about like what is academic integrity, I think we can start to consider it as a terms of agency in some ways, rather than that negative connotation to your point of what you're saying. And thinking about, okay, what are the strengths that, you know, as people in the humanities, what do we bring to the table? And what are like the transferable skills that we can teach them? And I think for me, I'm always thinking about practicality with them because they are in an age where they're just like, okay, what's the point of this? Like, why am I doing this? I shouldn't just be doing this for a class. And I mean, I agree with them at some point. Like you spend tons of money, you're here for 4 years and like you come out and you're like, okay, I just did all this work, but I have no like real skills to show for it. So I think in a sense, academic integrity could be shifted in some ways to thinking about what skills can we give them that they can then use and feel a sense of like pride in that they know how to use those skills well.
Yeah, I think to your point, Faith, about agency, I think that's a great observation. And I think with agency comes this ability to like it, that it's okay to fail when you're writing for a course and you're not sure how to put your thoughts into words, that it doesn't have to come out perfect. And that goes into the writing process that we edit these documents, improve them. But I think that a lot of the motivation or maybe the fear when it comes to putting your thoughts to words and writing that first assignment is it needs to be like perfect or it needs to be, yeah, my professor needs to think this is wonderful. So what I may do then is go to an AI source.
Do y'all play with AI in your classrooms?
I do.
Speak on that.
So there's a couple different dimensions of it, right? Like part, when I first introduced it, I had them like compare two different things. I think this is similar to something that you have done. But I did have them like compare like something written by AI and something that I wrote. And I was like, which one's which? And that was just like early icebreaker sort of activity. I have used it to help organize my thoughts into assignments. How it like not just prompting it and being like, give me an assignment, but like helping in like outline stages and stuff. And in my social sciences unit, I took a day where I explained to them what large language models do, that they're like statistics machines, and just pushed questions to the class, having them think through, what is this maybe helpful with? What is this not helpful with? But I would be interested to hear how other people do it, because I've heard of a really interesting assignment where like people have their students generate like an AI interlocutor to argue with in like dialectic rhetorical kind of mode of argumentation, which I feel like is very interesting, but I'm not quite sure. It's still experimental for me. And I know the Carolina AI Literacy Initiative is doing a lot of interesting stuff with 105 and AI. What about y'all?
I don't know if this is the right or wrong approach, but this semester, at least, I took an approach of, I'd rather you drink at home than drink at your friends' houses. If you're going to use AI, why don't we use it together in the classroom? And so my kind of explicit policy with them has been, if you're curious about how to use AI about something, if you have questions about AI, if you're thinking that maybe it could be useful for an assignment that you're working on, but you're not really sure how, just ask me in class and we can talk about it and we can experiment with it. And the other day, I had them do this big, long analysis of their reflection journals. And one of them popped their hand up and said, can I put my whole reflection journal in ChatGPT and see what it says? I said, I don't see why not. Let's do it. And so he did. And he still had to do all of this reflective work on this sheet that I had given them, but he was able to see some patterns that would not have come so quickly to him because he's not a machine. And we had a conversation about that. I said, when you're using AI, try to think about what it is good at and what it is not good at. And one thing that it's very good at is being a machine and pattern recognition. So they tried that, and that was really productive and successful and had them thinking about their journals in different ways.
Can I ask you all about the way we just use AI as this vague catch-all acronym? And in the article, it seemed like they were differentiating a little bit more, or at least one of the writers was talking about translation AI. And I think that's a category of AI that is more assistive, things like grammar checkers, autocomplete versus generative AI. So do we need to be more careful? How can we get to the next level when we're talking about just AI?
Yeah, I should have clarified generative AI there, what I was referring to.
And especially in terms of integrity. So if we're going to set policies and you say no AI, but I have a second language student who uses their phone to translate what I'm saying because it's easier for them to actually be in the class that way. And I just say no AI. What does that mean? Is that student in violation? I'm just wondering about how we get more granularity as we talk about these things.
Yeah, I have two students who are international students. And so one of them in particular, I know she uses AI in some. I can just tell by the way that it's being written sometimes that I can see it's AI. And at first I was unsure how to approach it, but I think reading this article and just like having my own like understanding of, okay, there are like certain limitations that the student is coming in with that I have to be aware of and knowledgeable of. And if AI is going to help her write this paper, then I need to allow that type of AI, whatever type that she's using, translation materials to help her write that. Because I think the article talked a lot about inequity, and I think that it would be for that student an inequity to completely be like, okay, no AI usage. So I think having specificity in what type of AI we're thinking about could be useful, because in a lot of academic spaces, like we think about AI as like this one conglomerate and that just like is what we go on. And I've even had students freak out. They're like, I'm using Grammarly, but I know sometimes that will count as AI and Turnitin will sometimes detect Grammarly as AI. I've seen that in a lot of cases. So I do think that there does need to be some type of concrete definition of, okay, in this academic space, like how are we viewing what I guess is acceptable, quote unquote, acceptable AI and not acceptable in terms of like plagiarism policies.
I do think it's a good point too, because I guess the cultural climate that we're in right now, AI is a very financially rewarded buzzword in that form as AI. And so there's a lot of advertising around AI. I feel some students come in with a deep understanding of how the technologies work, and other students come in with a very like reified understanding of AI as a magical Terminator technology. And it's not that. I do think that there's a lot of value, like pedagogical and analytical value, in separating out the different kinds of technologies that fall under the AI umbrella. Because to your point, Faith, I also have a student who, international student, early on in the semester was like, for sure, using AI. And I met with them and I was like, hey, what's up? I wasn't like, you're using AI. I was just like, hey, what's up? And we talked through it, and they were just very nervous about writing in English. They speak very good English, and the AI that they were using was this kind of machine translation AI. They were writing in Portuguese and then translating the whole thing and just turning that in. And I was like, look, I'm not going to penalize you for learning. So like, let's try just writing in English and seeing how it worked. And they were down for that. And it has been a big change, I think. And I've seen some improvement in their writing specifically over the last unit and a half since we had this conversation. So I think it's also making interventions like that that makes a big difference, because I could imagine approaching that in a way that does feel a little bit more disciplinary and enforcing that wouldn't have had a very great outcome for that student. So I don't know. Yeah.
That seems like a real success.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy with how that turned out. It made me feel good as a writing instructor that I was able to accomplish that.
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent example of treating it as a case-by-case basis in some ways, rather than just taking a boilerplate set of laws and saying, you can't do this, can't do this, but maybe creating space in the classroom for transparency and just asking students, hey, like, how are you going to approach this? If you're going to use AI, let's talk through it, rather than saying, here are the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, and this reminds me, Cal, of what you said earlier about students being afraid to mess up, quote unquote, in their writing. And I really feel like 105 is the kind of least appropriate space for students to be trying to write perfectly. This should be the space where they are trying all kinds of things and seeing what works and seeing what they can articulate and what they can't quite figure out yet. So I think, Kyle, I bet you probably had a really good rapport with that student too, and they had a good degree of trust in you. And I think that's so, so, so important when you're trying to deal with issues, deal with integrity, deal with the different kind of ways that students are approaching their learning, to just be open and kind with.
So this is making me think about assessment again, which I know the authors bring that in a lot. And they had a quote in there. Renee, maybe you can weigh in on this with your research background. The quote said, what would universities look like if we rejected the idea of the individual author? What would assessment mean? And your Actor Network reference as well, Kyle, we might include technologies in that equation. So is that kind of the key? If we switch our assessment models, maybe that's the best way to deal with this integrity question.
That makes me think of the example that they also mentioned in the article about not being able to cite AI as a co-author because it doesn't have any accountability. And that's one of the conditions for authorship. So if it's defined that way, then it makes sense that AI to be relegated to an assistive capacity. Maybe as the keyboard that you use or as your PC or your laptop, but it with the difference. And then what's that difference is that we need to decide. And I think you guys are right when saying that decision is made on a case-by-case basis. In my case, and I don't know how applicable this will be, but the way in which I deal with what I think are the consequences of AI doesn't have to do anything with AI at all. What I've realized is that it's very difficult to try to convince a student that they should write something when there's a technology that can do it better than they do. But one of the things that the technology cannot do is read for them or interpret things for them. And I know this is a writing course, but I think reading is so important. And I noticed that a lot of them don't even read prompts. So what I've been doing is centering reading practices in the classroom. So we'll read texts that I have selected before together, and we're going to do work on those texts in the class. So I'm not mentioning AI at all, but the reason that I'm bringing that into the classroom is because of AI.
I think that goes back to what the article was saying about critical thinking. And I think they pointed that out where, I can't find the page exactly, but someone was like, they submitted a peer review, or they asked AI to do a peer review, ChatGPT to peer review an article or something, and just gave them basic, oh, fix your grammar, give you basic things. And even I do copywriting work, and sometimes I'll throw a sentence in ChatGPT. I'm like, does this sound good? I don't know, because it's just me. I don't have a peer reviewer. So in that case, I do think it's helpful for them to catch those mistakes that they're not as adept to thinking about as we might be as more experienced writers than they are. But I mean, I think something that they were saying, that ChatGPT can't think, I can't be like, oh, could consider this, or this doesn't really make sense. Have you thought about it in this way? So it's getting them to think critically. And I think reading is an important aspect of that, because they're just skimming through things or not really paying attention to things. Like, I have students who ask me like the same question over, and I'm like, you would read it, like you would know, but they just don't, like they just don't think about that, I think, because everything's so easily accessible to them. So getting them to actually slow down and pay attention to things, and that will start to generate them to ask questions of the text, ask questions as they're reading their own thing. So I do think that reading is a way to deal with AI without necessarily hanging that over their heads of, you can't use AI, or having that as a fear that's in the back of their minds consistently as they're going throughout the class.
Yeah. And I think what you're bringing up, Dan, about assessment becomes really difficult with some of these conversations, because like the normative models of assessment in the academy are also like just shot through with this individualist kind of solitary, like, ideology of what it means to do work and how work is performed, like this like imaginary subject of the like genius author, and how that just permeates through all modes of academic work and assessment. And I think like this is something that I think about a lot with my grading scheme and getting to the end of this semester with 105 and like how I'm going to change that. And I'm thinking a lot about the portfolio model with like reflection, and thinking about like the relationality of writing and doing any kind of work, and how to argue for your own agency in that reflection, but also to think critically about what is involved in that agency and what other factors are involved there that are helping in that process. And even if you don't use AI, there's still not this like singular author where you are able to produce a thing completely barred off from the world and your relationships and other kinds of technology. Like, everyone's using Word. That's a technology too. Everyone's got a pencil. That's a technology. You're using language. People could call that a technology too. So like, I think incorporating AI and that kind of portfolio of reflection, maybe thinking through how that works, would be a potential way of rethinking assessment that might be generative, to use a buzzword of the day.
I think famously, writing is a technology. And I was extravagantly excited to tell my students that when at the beginning of the semester, to say this is actually not an innate skill. This is something that we've invented. And Kyle, it sounds like you might be thinking about or thinking around ungrading models too, where you put more of the onus of assessment onto students and have them perform that assessment through reflection. That's something that I am thinking through as well. I'm doing a portfolio this semester, but it seems to me that the most generative work that we do really is in their reflection and in the dialogues that we have in the marginal comments next to their reflections.
This has been a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate it. And Renee, when you were talking about reading, it was connected to thinking. I think it was you were saying reading and thinking are connected. And one of the things I liked about the article and other people who've thought about AI and are worried about AI is they're worried because there's an explicit connection between writing and thinking as well. And I think that's a thread throughout the conversation when you've said, if you're showing me the AI content, I can't see your thinking. And it's okay if the thinking is messy. We'll come up with a way to look at it. But one challenge is, I think we've often just used writing the product as the measure to assess thinking. So how can I tell what's going on with your thinking? Let me look at this product here. And what we're being invited to do is do something really different. And as a way of wrapping up, our listeners can think about this. We're talking about this in terms of AI and academic integrity. What is academic integrity is the question you all surfaced. And I'm thinking that this link between reading and writing and thinking could be a rationale, not only for why we need a different model of what counts as integrity for AI, but academic integrity broadly, plagiarism, any of these categories maybe can be understood by this link between writing and thinking in many ways. So thank you, everyone. This has been a super informative conversation, and it's opened as many questions as it has closed, which is always the way we like to do this. So thanks again to my guests, and we will tune in next time for another episode of Teach Right.